There was a sound of snapping bonds, or perhaps it was the sound of wrist bones breaking. Regardless, Mohayam freed one of her hands. It flashed the gag over her mouth, but Stilgar's kris knife was faster. He stabbed her chest, knowing it to be a mortal wound, but the Reverend Mother kept moving, forcing her hand to pull the gag free. Stilgar struck again, puncturing her larynx and slashing her throat, causing her to slump. He kicked the chair and body over, then looked at his sticky fingers. As he wiped the milky blade on the Reverend Mother's dark robes, he realized that the blood of the witch looked and smelled the same as any other blood. Those had not been the only killings ordered by Aaliyah. It had been a long and difficult night. Now, as the great worm approached the gap that had been blasted through the shield wall by Paul's atomics, Stilgar saw a barricade of water-filled canuts that no worm could cross, especially a tired one like this. Better to release the beast here, out on the open sand. He had ridden and released so many sandworms that he had lost count. As a Fremen, guiding the sacred creatures over the dunes had always been dangerous, but not to be feared, if you followed the proper protocol. Short of the gap, he set the creature in motion, slipped down the pebbled rings, and tumbled off into the sand. Then he rose to his feet and remained motionless, so that the worm would not detect his presence. Sandworms had no eyes, simply sensed vibrations. But the creature paused and turned his way as soon as Stilgar released it. Usually a worm set free of its rider would lurch away into the desert or bury itself under the sand and sulk. But this one remained where it was, looming, intimidating. It raised its giant head high, facing down toward him. Its mouth was a round cave bristling with tiny crystalline knives. Stilgar froze in the enormous presence of the creature. It knew he was there, yet it did not move toward him, did not attack. Trembling slightly, the Naib could not forget the whispered rumors that Muad'Dib, having trekked out on the sands, had become one with Shai Hulud. The sandworm's eyeless head had an eerie, sightless gaze, making him think of Muad'Dib. Though blinded, the great man had been able to see Stilgar through prescience. He felt a sudden chill. Something was different. He breathed slowly, forming the words in his thoughts, but with barely a sound passing across his dry lips.
Muad'Dib, are you there?
It seemed foolish, but he could not escape the feeling. In an instant, the sandworm could dive down and devour him, but it did not. After several long, tense moments, the enormous creature turned and glided off into the sands, leaving Stilgar standing there, shaking. He watched as the creature drifted off and burrowed itself deep, leaving barely a ripple to mark its passage. Tingling with awe, wondering what exactly he had just experienced, Stilgar sprinted with a well-practiced stutter step across the dunes toward the shield wall and the great city beyond. There is a rule about surprises. Most of them are not good. Anonymous of Old Terra. Jessica had been a long time away from the desert, from the Fremen, and from the mindset that permeated Arrakis. Doom. She drew a deep breath, sure that the air inside the passenger cabin already felt drier. As the showy political transport descended from orbit, she stared down at the sprawling city beyond the spaceport, picking out familiar Arrakine landmarks, noting swaths of new construction. The immense citadel of Muad'Dib dominated the north side of the city, though many additional new structures vied for attention on the skyline. Numerous government buildings shouldered up against enormous temples to Muad'Dib and even to Aaliyah. With her knowledge of Bene Gesserit methods for controlling impressions, manipulating history, and herding large populations, Jessica saw exactly what Paul, or more accurately, his bureaucracy, intended to do. Much of government was about creating perceptions and moods. Long ago, the Bene Gesserit had unleashed their Missionaria Protectiva here on Arrakis to plant legends and prime the people for a myth. Under Paul Muad'Dib, those seeds had come to fruition, but not in the way the Sisterhood had anticipated. The transports settled on a demarcated area reserved for important visitors. Swirls of sand obscured Jessica's view through the porthole. When the exit doors opened, she smelled dust in the air, heard the susurration of a waiting crowd. The mobs had already gathered, a sea of dirty robes and covered faces. It was late afternoon by local time, and the white sun cast long shadows. She saw hundreds of people in brown and gray desert garb intermixed with those who wore city clothing in a variety of colors. All had come to see her. Still inside the transport, Jessica hesitated.
"I wasn't anxious to return here, Gurney. Not at all."
For a long moment, he remained silent in an unsuccessful attempt to hide his emotions, his uneasiness, maybe even his dread of facing the wailing masses. Finally, he said,
"What is this place without Paul? It isn't Arrakis. Dune, Gurney. It will always be Dune."
Though Jessica still could not grieve, with those feelings locked down or trapped inside of her, now she felt moistness in her eyes, a stinging hint of the release she wanted and needed. But she didn't allow a single tear. Dune did not permit her to give water to the dead, not even for her son, and the Sisterhood discouraged emotions, except as a means of manipulating outsiders. Thus, both disciplines, Fremen and Bene Gesserit, prevented her from letting the tears flow. Jessica stepped toward the open hatch and the bright sunlight.
"Did I retire from this place, Gurney? Or did I retreat?"
She had hoped to spend the rest of her life on Caladan, never setting foot on this world again.
"Think of what this planet has done to us.
Dune took my Duke and my son and shattered all our hopes and dreams as a family.
It swallows people."
"Each person makes his own paradise, or his own hell." Gurney extended his arm, and she reluctantly took it. He activated his body shield before they stepped out into the open.
"I recommend you do the same, my lady. With a mob this size, they can't all be searched for weapons."
Jessica did as he suggested, but even the shimmering field did not make her feel entirely safe. Flanked by six big Fedaiken guards, Stilgar appeared at the shuttle ramp to escort her. He looked weathered, dusty, and grim.
"As always, the same old Stilgar."
She was reassured to see the Naib again.
"Sayadina, I am here to ensure your safety."
It was both a greeting and a promise. He did not allow himself to show any overt joy at seeing her again after so many years.
"I will take you directly to Regent Aaliyah. I am in your care, Stilgar."
Though he was all business now, she expected they would share spice coffee later and talk, after he and Gurney got her away from the throng. More Fremen warriors waited at the base of the shuttle ramp, forming a cordon to clear a way through the crowd for the mother of Muad'Dib, as if sheltering her from the winds of a sandstorm. Stilgar led the visitors forward. Overlapping voices in the crowd called out her name, shouting, chanting, cheering, begging for blessings from Muad'Dib. The people wore grimy clothes of green, the color of Fremen mourning. Some had scratched at their eyes until blood ran down their cheeks, in some kind of eerie homage to Paul's blindness. With her heightened attention, Jessica perceived a thread of animosity woven into the tapestry of voices, calling out from every direction. They wanted, they needed, they demanded and grieved, but could not crystallize their feelings. The loss of Paul had left an immense void in society. Stilgar hurried her along. We must not delay. There is danger here today. There is always danger here, she thought. As the Fedaiken guards pushed at the crowd, she heard a clatter of metal and a scream. Behind them, two of the guards threw themselves to the ground, covering something with their own bodies. Gurney put himself between them and Jessica, further protecting her with his body shield. An explosion tore the two guards into bloody fragments that splattered back into the crowd. Stunned by the shockwave, some people touched the red wetness, marveling at the moisture that had suddenly appeared on their clothes. Stilgar pulled Jessica toward the terminal building, hurting her arm. Hurry, he said. There may be other assassins. He did not look back at the fallen guards.